Hi, welcome to Gridiron Gurus. I'm Travis Lazarczyk for the Kennebec Journal and Morning Sentinel alongside my colleague Drew Bonifant. Drew, how are you doing this week?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good. Our guest this week is Jake Rogers, the first-year head coach at Nokomis High School in Newport. And Jake, thanks for being here.
Not a problem.
First, you were a longtime assistant at Lawrence. Talk about kind of adjusting to being the head man at a program like Nokomis.
Well, it's been different. The boys have been learning just the knowledge of the way I've been taught and the way I've been coaching. Mm-hmm. They are not used to that, so it's been a little bit of a change.
Sure.
And just dealing with all the extra stuff, dealing with the athletic directors and the principal, and fundraising and the booster club. So there's a lot more extra stuff you got to worry about.
Yeah, if it only were on the field.
It's just not X's and O's anymore. It's a lot more of the extra things you got to worry about.
Sure.
I mean, you had an exciting game last week, and for anybody who doesn't know yet, down 14-7 going to the last drive, and I'm scoring a touchdown the final drive, went 15-14. We'll get to how you took the lead in that case, but I mean, just talk about the emotions involved with a game like that.
Well, that 7 points we got, if we hadn't scored there, we really felt it could have went downhill real fast because it was crunch time. We really needed that score for any positive because we'd been struggling offensively to finish drives.
Right.
And once we got that in, they raised up a little bit more. And then once we got that stop, we really felt we could do something. Just positive thinking, really. And they hung in. You know, it's ups and downs, and they stayed on the up. Luckily for us, because it would have been real easy for them just to quit, and they didn't. So,
I mean, for that winning drive, you take over. It's where probably like your own 35.
They had the ball with 3 minutes left, mm-hmm. and all we said was you got to get a 3-and-out,
yeah,
and force a punt. So they did it. We got a 3-and-out. said let's get a good return. We got a decent punt return out of it, and we said let's go. Let's go Lightning, make it happen. And I mean, it's almost idiot proof. Lightning, you just go out and go. So I mean, they executed it real well. They worked the sidelines. We got threw deep right out of the gate. Got a pass interference call. I mean, really, if he wasn't interfered, more than likely he catches that ball early. Which in the lot, you know, at the end of it, it was a good thing that happened because we might have left too much time on the clock. So, but. I mean, for not getting a ton of live reps with it, I mean, we always go on air. They really did an excellent job utilizing the clock. So, I mean, we only had like a minute 20, I think it was, to go, what was it, 60 yards, 70 yards,
something like that.
I mean, so it was good.
Can you remember a point where it stopped feeling like, you know, okay, let's see if we can kind of get something going here. Let's see if we can get a miracle going here or something. And when it started to feel more like, you know, we're a play away from pulling this off. I think we're going to do this.
I really felt it was that drive in the third quarter. I mean, we right out of the gate, you know, we'd been pretty sluggish offensively. We'd get some yards and then do something dumb, either turn it over or a penalty. But we got the ball, we got the kickoff, and we just marched right down the field. We ate up, I think, 8 minutes or something like that. It was a long drive. But once we got to the goal line, we were struggling and struggling. I mean, I think we might have scored on fourth. It might have been a third down. I can't remember.
It was fourth down.
So, I mean, I block it out. So I try not to remember what down it is. You know, that could have been the game right there. But we punched it in. As soon as we scored, I'm like, all right, I think they can do it. So it's been preaching to them about not being scared of success. Mm-hmm. And that's something they've been hearing from me for a long time now. So, well, as long as I've known them. So it's only been a couple of months.
Since mid-August.
Yeah, since mid-August.
You score the touchdown on fourth down to make it 14-13. You line up to kick the extra point, but the whole time you've got your assistant coach, was it Ryan Robinson?
Yeah, Ryan.
In your head saying, you know, go for the fake. They're going to sell out to...
Well, he
come for the block.
He was in my ear pretty early, even before we scored, because I'm like, yeah, I'm going for two.
Yeah.
I'm going for two if we score. And he's like, go for the fake. I'm like, eh. I kept hemming and hawing about it because I always say, if you're gonna go for it, run your offense. Well, our goal line offense wasn't real good, so he kept saying it. I'm like, you know what? It took us 4 plays to go 1 yard, so I better go with the fire. It might be a better call. So yeah. I was glad he was in my ear, because I would have tried to run an offensive play, and we didn't have a great high percentage that day on that. Yeah. So
no, your team only Andrew Haining was the only one who knew you were doing that for the snap.
Yeah.
You told him, you know, run fire.
Yeah.
And they executed it perfectly.
Well, and you know, if coaching staffs typically are looking at the other coaching staff, the way I look at it, and you muck along to all your guys and you get a huddle going, and the other coach knows something's up.
Right.
So I just wanted to be real nonchalant about it. Just, you know, relax, you know, just run fire. You know, that's how we do it in practice. And you know, I'll just tell them, you know, just call it, you know, just out of the blue. So, and it seemed to work. So
yeah,
they did a good job with it, because I was nervous he was holding onto the ball too long. I was waiting for him to throw it. So,
well, I was thinking, you know, when Drew and I were talking about this earlier, you tell everybody we're going for the fake. That's when kids might get a little nervous, tighten up. You get a kid who jumps off sides, and you got to go 5 extra yards to get it, and everybody knows what you're going to do at that point.
Yeah.
So just, you know, surprise them, and they might surprise you.
You know, they walked out like they were going to kick it. So, and that was what we wanted. So they brought the house. We had a guy open. Luckily, he got it.
Yeah.
With what's the thinking like in that moment? You said you knew you were going for two even before
your
coach got in. Is that just because you just kind of you feel like the team is feeling the moment?
It's a
okay,
feel.
It's not so much it's like a, trying to avoid
feel,
overtime or something.
It's what are we doing well? What are they doing well? Well, if they were in spread, I probably would have said, you know what, we'll kick it. But they were in double wing. I don't miss that offense. I thought it was gone. But when that offense is. I don't care if you're in a 6'5", you could have 8 on the line. If they want to run wedge, they usually can get 3 yards. And that made me nervous. They were really big up front. They were ripping us for 3 yards on wedge pretty much the whole day. So I knew they had 3 yards in them. So I didn't want to get into a tie situation where it's in the goal line.
Right.
Where they can just keep running wedge at us and they're gonna score and we may not. Because back to the point where we were pretty bad down in the goal line, they were good. We weren't.
Yeah.
So
It was certainly the most memorable finish you've had at Nokomis so far. I'm sure you're hoping for many, many more. Gets us thinking about what are some of the more memorable finishes each of us has seen. Start with you, Drew. You've only been covering high school football in Maine for a year, but you saw a few last year.
Yeah. I got some good ones last year.
You were like Mr. Take Your Breath Away.
It
some
seemed
of those
like
games.
That way for about 2 or 3 weeks. I don't think I can turn down the easy favorite here. That Lisbon-Monmouth game from last year was – or the Lisbon-Winthrop-Monmouth game was nuts. I mean, it was basically the ending of your game, only if Oceanside had then returned a kick to the 50 and scored a touchdown from there. It was it was nuts.
And I was nervous of that. That's why we didn't kick it.
I mean, but you just talk about, the fact that Winthrop in that game scored their touchdown to take the lead on a fourth down, and then it was the long pass and the I think it was a completion. I thought for a second it was pass interference, but it was a completion to bring it to the goal line. Then they punch it in less than a second left. It was almost hokey with how storybook it was, but I don't know if I'll see a game on top of it. That was pretty crazy.
Well, you almost saw one like that the very next week. I'm going to go with the Class D state championship game last year, Lisbon versus MCI, where MCI wins on a it wasn't a fake field goal.
No,
it was a
botched hold. Yeah.
You know, Eli Buzzle, the kid who was holding, would tell you know that exactly. But he yelled fire, and just like your team on Saturday, they ran it perfectly. And he got a block downfield, and Eli Buzzle scores the winning touchdown with no time left. Caps a comeback. They're down 14-0 at the half. Chipped away. We're lining up for what they hoped would be the game-winning field goal. Instead, they get the game-winning touchdown. Now, you were an assistant coach for some very good Lawrence teams over the years.
Yep.
What games stand out from your days?
Well, there were two right back-to-back for me, and they were both against Coney. One year we get them, then they get us the following year. Literally.
All right.
Identical situations. The better team is ahead, and the other team's scoring. The year we beat Coney, they were better than we were, but we were in a situation where we're like, we're playing at Coney, we're gonna go for two.
Right.
We get it, we win. Last year, complete opposite. They're at Kai's, fourth and goal from the 13.
Something like that.
And Roddy makes that excellent catch in the back of the end zone.
He was covered.
Oh, he was covered.
Yeah.
He was covered, but hard to stop somebody like that.
Yeah, he's just a great athlete.
You know,
yeah.
He had probably best game he's ever had in his life. I mean, he was dominant on the field. And then it's like, we know they're going for two. We know they're going for two. And just give it to him again. And he ran right in the end zone. And, yeah. Like, we could feel it. It was identical of the following year, yeah. The previous year.
It was and I think they converted a couple fourth downs on that drive, that final drive, to keep it going.
Yeah, so. Too many.
Then you guys had – were you, Lawrence, when you beat Gorham in the state game, 14-13? Yeah. Talk about the double wing. You guys handled it pretty well.
Like I said, I don't miss it at all. And that was – I mean, they were – that was a big team.
And that was one of the best defensive efforts I've ever seen, right from the opening kickoff. Like I was telling Drury, when you caused a fumble on the opening kickoff and score, and then block punt by Aaron Champagne. Yep.
Block PAT, block field goal, yeah.
Yeah,
that group game was special.
Yeah, that was a fun game group to watch.
Yeah, right? That was – and that's – like the spread's great and all, but – that double wing, I'd rather defend the spread any day than that double wing, because the practice week that you go through to defend it, it's brutal.
It's basically football three-card Monty trying to figure out where the ball is. If people don't know, it's two wings and the balls. There's a lot of double dives and the ball's hidden until the guy's 10 yards downfield.
It's down blocking, a lot of trapping, and the counter crisscross out of it, and if a team runs option out of it, it's shoe-to-shoe playing in a phone booth. And when you practice for it, by Friday the boys are beat up.
Oh, yeah.
It's not fun to prep for.
No. I was standing on the sideline just along the yard line of where that play was taking place, and I still couldn't sometimes keep track of who had it. You just kind of look for, okay, where is everybody piled up, and who's the last person to get up and hold the ball? Okay, that's who ran it.
And the teams with the dark colored jerseys, it's even hotter. Like Warren had but they had the maroon a lot like Nokomis.
Yeah.
That ball gets hidden and you're just trying to.
It worked for some. I mean, Skowhegan went to a state game with it. Mesolansky had success with it. Booth Bay won a pair of state titles with it down in Class C many years ago. It's effective if you run it properly.
I think a lot of teams that are struggling, it's a great offense to go to because you can have instant success without great talent up front. If you have a couple of running backs, you can run that offense and gain yards. I believe it's actually my old pal coach, Rick Leary's running that at Mount View.
Sure.
Yep. So, I mean, it was instant. They were moving the ball, running it. I don't want to coach it. I get a little bit of claustrophobia from it. The wing tee's close to it, but it's not that. It's not too tight, shoe to shoe.
Yeah.
Linemen don't like it. They get a lot of bang toes. It's not fun.
Class C is not only a new league for you as a former coach in the Pine Tree Conference and a player in the Country Pine Tree forever. It's new for your team as well, as coming down from Class B. How important is it to get these wins early to get some confidence and build the program the way you want to build it?
Well, I mean, it's getting to that positive reinforcement that if you put the time in, you believe in the system, that you're going to get some payout eventually. And they've gotten a little bit of payout already. I use payday as a term. You grind all week, you put in your time, you get paid on game day. And we've been fortunate, we've been getting paid a little bit, so that it helps a little bit. It's hard for them, if you just keep getting loss after loss and they don't see the payout in the end. So they understand it. They're putting some — the boys are starting to put expectations on themselves, and I like that, but they got to back it up too. So,
sure.
I know you weren't at Nokomis for last year and they were 0-8 last year.
Yep.
But I mean, have you heard from players just saying just kind of an indicator that there's just more of an excitement around practice, there's more of an excitement to show up and get ready for
games? I don't usually give them time to tell me about it because we start it. Typically 3:15, and we don't stop until 5:15. It's constant, and they scatter like cockroaches as soon as I let them out. So, I mean, some of them boys have a half hour drive home. So
true, it's a big
district. It's a huge district. So, and a lot of them, a lot of those guys, they got to go right to work as soon as practice is done. So, we don't chit chat a whole lot. It's in and out, get it done.
Yeah. Big story in Maine high school football this week was the decision by Trape Academy and Kittery to forfeit the rest of the season, citing just low numbers, a lot of injuries. They didn't have a lot of players on the team to begin with. So after a few games in the new Class E developmental league, they decide, we just can't do it anymore. I ask you, Drew, is this something that we should have seen coming, or is this going to be an aberration?
I mean, it's probably something that we should have seen coming with the struggles that they've had throughout the years to field teams, and this isn't something new.
No.
And so, I mean, and that they're in a league with other schools that have had trouble fielding their teams. I mean, it's still surprising because you think that being in that class makes it easier to get by with low numbers. But I mean, just talk about something that has ripple effects throughout the class.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like Trape just folds up shop, heads out, and then okay, no more Trape, everything's fine. Miranda Cook had two of the last four games against Trape.
Yeah.
It's the school that started with, you know, they're 3-0 this season. So, you know, they're kind of rolling, and all of a sudden you hear that, you know, two of your last five games or four games are going to be out of the mix.
Are they going to be able to find anyone to schedule for those?
They
said
the last update was that their AD said they were going to consider playing JV games in that stretch.
Okay.
I mean, just because it's tough to find other teams to play.
Sure, everyone's got their own schedule at this point.
Yeah, good luck with that. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're going to do something to take up the time. But you know, just I would imagine it stinks if you're on Miranda Cook, everything's been going as well as you having kind of a breakthrough season here, and you learn two of your opponents or two of your last games are going to be next. It's,
yeah, coach. I mean, if you don't have the players, you don't have the players. That's the one thing you absolutely have to have.
You can't just take them from the student body and say you've got to play football.
Right.
It's, you know, I would love to see a system where these programs that just don't have enough, where those kids have an option, where they could go to if they live closer to a school, they should have the right to go play football at that school. You know, if the community mm-hmm. can't support the team, it would be nice if there are kids within that community that they can still go out and find a program to play at. I know we do it for like wrestling. If your mm-hmm. if your school doesn't have wrestling, you can go join another wrestling team. You wrestle as an independent a lot,
right.
And I know they do it for indoor track. But you know, because there are, you know, you're going to have these small communities where kids want to play the sport, it's hard to find the number. There's a lot of kids not playing the sport as it is right now, and
so many hockey teams in Maine, for instance, now do the co-op teams.
Yep.
Waterville Winslow is going to be a new one in this area, for instance. And football, co-op football has succeeded at some places. Madison, Carabec, Monmouth, Winthrop is an example. St. Don's players are playing with Lisbon this year as they look to maybe build a program of their own. I guess Trape, the nearest school would be Marshwood, which probably isn't, you know, in that situation where they need kids. And I guess if the taking school has enough of their own, you can't really tell them, you know, take on 10 or 15 more from another place when, you know, the playing time for your own kids is hard to come by.
The one thing I always liked as a problem coaching football is having too many kids.
True.
And that, 'cause all that means is you can save a kid a lot of hits where you may not have to play him both ways. You may not have to play him on special teams. It actually makes the game a whole lot safer, where you can limit the amount of contact these kids have. And that's a great thing. I mean, if you have a kid that can just worry about one job, that allows that kid to really be successful at one thing, that's a great thing. And it makes it practice a lot easier, because now you can have two scout teams.
Mm-hmm.
So that one team's just not getting, you know, roughed up by the better players. It's not a bad problem to have.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, depth in football is so much different than depth in other sports.
Exactly.
Where it's like, you know, if you have two kids who are trying to be a defensive end, for instance, you know, in other sports, it's okay, well, only one could be the starter, so one rides the bench, maybe doesn't get into a game unless it's a blow. But in football, it could be, well, you're bigger, I'm quicker. You're down on the running downs. I'm here on the passing downs.
It can go matchups. You know, we try to platoon our guys because we're so thin.
Mm-hmm.
All our guys play special teams both ways,
right.
So we try to get them breaks, either on defense. You know, typically not try to get the linemen out on offense, just so they keep that cohesion. But you know, when you have extra guys, it's not a problem. It never has been.
Hopefully it works out for Trape in the future,
yeah.
And they can play some JV games the rest of this season and just keep the program alive. Drew, any surprises or anything you noticed last week
worth mentioning? In the moment, I don't think anything was as surprising as the fourth quarter of that Messalonsky-Skowhegan game. It was just
sure.
There was no defense played, none, zero. It was pass, score, And then Mesolanski runs one play up the gut, goes all the way for a touchdown. I mean, it was probably just
teams being wiped out. Yeah, I saw the stats, and I was thinking, that's a video game.
Yeah, just teams being spent and just couldn't physically man up to make the stops and the passing game more on the ground. But overall, when you look at the larger scheme of standings and everything, probably Oak Hill getting beat by Old Orchard Beach 30-13 was because Oak Hill started fast, and I just thought it would, I mean, Old Orchard Beach had a decent start too. I mean, they got off to a 1-1 start, but to command the game the way they did and to really make it that one sided, I was following along on Twitter when I saw that. I almost did a double take when I saw it. Sure. Anything kind of strike you that way?
Yeah, I wasn't surprised that Winslow defeated Waterville. I think while Waterville is an improved team, they've still got to come a little way. So I was probably surprised at the outcome, 57-10, and the way Winslow just kind of manhandled them. Winslow coming off a tough loss to Lawrence, kind of wanted to get back on track, and they certainly did. This week, what are some big games you're looking for?
Looking at Coney Mount Blue, because that just seems – both teams are 1-2. It seems like that's going to be – I feel like we've said this before with some Coney games already. But, one of those teams is going to be 2-2 and be in pretty good shape playoff-wise. You know, have a good road ahead of them to try to play themselves back into the mix. And at 1-3, the other team will really have a hole to climb out of. It's not over. I mean, Coney was 1-4 last year and made the playoffs. So it's not like it's – you know, the season's over, but it just makes things tough. And Gardner York, also 2-1-2 teams, but I think teams that have played tougher than those records would indicate. Gardner, their point differential is even at the season so far. York is down one, so it's two teams that I think have been more competitive than records showed, and it's going to be I think it'll be a good game. How about you?
I'm interested in Madison at Wells, both teams 3-0, both new to Class C South. This will kind of be a good midseason test for both of them. Wells coming off a Class C state championship last year, and Madison had a really successful season in Class C North last year. Now they're both in Class D, so they both kind of had their way with Winthrop Monmouth in the first 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And Winthrop Monmouth coach Dave St. Hilaire said, give Madison the speed, give Wells the physicality, so it should be a great matchup. Another one in Class C is a crossover game, MCI and Cape Elizabeth, both 2-1. MCI lost opening week to the Oceanside team that you guys knocked off this last week, but then had a close win over you guys, and then pulled away from Belfast last week. Cape Elizabeth coming off a tough loss to that Wells team. Be interesting to see how they match up. You guys have a Madonmac Valley team this week that's also new to the league.
Yep,
man. How do you feel that matchup looks for you?
I think they've got a pretty good running game. They run a lot of counter, it's a version of the zone, I assume. They got a pretty good little. They're big up front. They're physical. They get after guys. They got a little quarterback that seems to be, he's confident. He's willing to run. Sure. You know, he scrambles and he runs. I think we match up pretty good. It's the teams that are always willing to run downhill always make me nervous. Because you miss a couple of tackles, they can really get after it. You know, we're built for speed. You know, we run typically a 4-2-5, and I keep the athletes out there so they can run everything down. But, that always makes me nervous. I'd rather defend the pass, and I always feel more confident we can scheme something up. But the teams that are willing to play smash mouth and run downhill always give me a little concern because they start hitting the gaps, they get downhill, and it's fast. It can change quick, so they're going to give us a pretty good fight, I think, up front, so it'll be a good challenge.
Any concern about a hangover or something like that from the win last weekend? Just team kind of
I don't even talk about it. I mean, when people say good win, I go, we need more, so I don't, I think I might have told you when you were talking to me, I don't try to dwell on losses, and I don't.
I think you mentioned Madonna two or three times when I'm trying to talk to you.
Rally. It's an old coach's cliche, but, I think Bill Belichick wasn't the first one to say it, so to the next one.
On to Madonna Rally.
Exactly. Since I started coaching, that's usually the way I'm at. I'm usually, when we would have big wins, I'd be on the grease board drawing up how to defend, whatever it was, if I knew the team. So,
okay. Well, we are going to be on to the Week 4 games this weekend. In whatever game you get out to this weekend, enjoy it. For Drew, for Coach Rogers, I'm Travis. Thanks for joining us this week on Gridiron Gurus.